You have a battery or a watch you can't place the battery in?
Oh, well, I can.
That's the end of the watch.
It's just more convenient to get a new watch because, honestly, the watch is about as expensive as the battery is. So.
Yeah.
It's not an expensive watch, and the batteries are pretty expensive.
And remember when I was young, I couldn't believe somebody would do things like that, but now even TI advertises their processors, you know. A one-time use, you just put a battery in and they throw the whole thing out and buy a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they say. Okay, I'm on the wrong page here. You're okay. What we need to do today is we need to do a little bit more with BJTs to learn a little more about how they work. Last time we were kind of introduced to them, maybe we'll do a quick review here of what we did last time so that you're kind of up to snuff here. This is the NPN bipolar junction transistor. The schematic looks like this, the base, collector, and emitter. The way it works is the emitter is heavily doped, in this case with an N-type doping, so there's extra electrons there. The P is normally doped. It's a skinny area, the base is, and the collector up here is ordinarily doped, just, you know, regular N. And the way we work this is the base and collector junction, collector-base junction, is reverse biased. And the base-emitter junction is forward biased. And remember, the key to this is that minority carriers will go right through a reverse bias junction with great glee, okay? But majority carriers won't. So what happens is that with this base emitter junction is you can make it so that when you bias this forward, it's going to move these electrons up into the base region. And when they're in the base region, they become minority carriers for the reverse bias junction between the base and the collector. And generally, we make it so the hill, you know, that's the voltage between the base and the collector, is very much bigger than the hill between the base and the emitter. And even the semiconductor physics kind of lends itself nicely to this because the forward voltage on a forward bias junction, PN junction, is about only 0.7 volts. So, you know, we can make this like 12 or something, and then, they just want to go sailing through to the collector. What that does is that allows a little bit of base current here to control, I mean, be proportional to a lot of collector current, okay? So a little bit of electrons coming out here is proportional to a gigantic number of electrons going north into the collector. And that's just exactly what we needed for a current amplifier. So basically, you know, if we think about, you know, the model for this, in some ways it kind of looks like this. This would be what we call a small signal model for the BJT. Would go like this. And this would be the base and the collector. And this is the emitter down here. And this is beta IB. I really should say maybe little I, so little b, really, because, you know, this would be little I sub little b, and this would be the input resistance, and, you know, there's probably some output resistance, but as you saw in the next page here, the IV characteristics of the output look almost just like current sources. They're almost straight across. If they had a little slope to them, and they actually do a tiny bit of slope going up, that would be 1 over the resistance or the conductance between C and E, okay? Which, you know, that conductance is very, very small, or the resistance is very, very large, so this isn't a bad approximation for, you know, a little, you know, amplifier, basically, right? And that's what they were originally used for. But nowadays they're often used, or actually probably more, another kind of transistor is used more often, but they're still used quite often for stuff like this. This is a If you had this guy on a chip, here you had the resistor and the transistor on the chip, they would often just bring this collector out on the pin out of the chip. And they call that an open collector output. Okay? The reason they do that is because you can put whatever VCC you need on here, maybe 12 volts. Your digital chip might be running on 5 or 3.3, and you can put 12 volts over there, and it will run this relay that needs 12 volts, which is kind of nice, right? So you just put your load right on there, and you can put it up to whatever voltage you really need. And so you can also use these bipolar junction transistors then as switches, which is kind of nice. So it works both ways. And we're going to see another kind of transistor that's more often used today called a MOSFET. And they have a similar kind of a thing here, and the thing that's analogous to the collector is called the drain on the MOSFET. You can imagine they call the thing on the bottom, instead of the emitter, they call it the source, and then the drain, that's where the electrons, they start at the source and drain out the drain, kind of like a plumbing, right? Yeah. So anyway, you can also get open drain outputs. In fact, they're probably more common nowadays than open collector outputs, but open collector outputs were like the first ones, and you'll still run into them every so often. The IV characteristic between the base emitter on the base and emitter right here looks like a diode, basically, and it has the same equation, same Shockley diode equation. Instead of calling this reverse current here I0, we call it IB0 now, because now there's a base in there, okay? And the rest of it's basically the same. And the output IV characteristics, you can see them here. Over in this region right here, we call, we kind of think of that as what's called the active region of the transistor. There are different, we can put different biases on the different pins of the transistor, different DC voltages there to make it operate in a different ways. Like, if you just think about, for example, the switch operation. We kind of made the switch either operated down here where there's no current, that would be where the switch is open, we call that cutoff, or the switch operated basically right over along in here where it's looking like a wire, right? 0 volts. So 0 volts a wire would be something going straight up right here, right? Just a wire. What's the IV characteristic of a wire? It's, straight up along the current axis, right? The voltage is zero across the wire. That's all we know. It doesn't matter how much current you put through it, it's always zero, right? So this region over here, we call that the saturation region of the BJT. And what that means is basically the transistor is on as good as you can get it, right? You try to make it conduct as much as you can, and it's over here. It's over here. The voltage across the collector to emitter is small, okay? And so we need to write down some of this stuff about regions, because that's very important. So, regions of operation. So there are two junctions, and with each junction there are two possible biases, right? Forward or reverse. And basically, when you change the bias of any junction, you change the region in which the transistor is operating. You fundamentally change the way it's going to work, right? So let's just make a table here. We will have the base emitter junction, and the other one is the collector base junction. So there's two junctions and two states, so that means there should be how many regions of operation? Four, right? So there should be four regions of operation. And I don't know, I guess I'll put the region over here. And we'll put that right here. So So the first one, let's just start through this organized. Forward biased. Okay? So that's when we've tried to, we've basically, what you've done here, let's think about this transistor circuit right here. So what I did to forward bias this, I need to make this really high, right? And so I make it high. That easily forward biases this junction, right? I could make it, bigger than VCC, and then, certainly everything would be forward biased all the way around. But you don't have to do that, because let's just see what happens on this curve right here. I'm going to pick, say, this top one right here, okay? I turned up, as I make the input go up, it makes the base current large, right? Now, this relay here, if you want to think about it, it's a coil of wire, right? Not only does it have inductance, but it also has a resistance, right? And so there's a certain resistance here. So if you just kind of replace this relay in your mind with a resistor, okay? Whatever it is, it's the load, right? And as I draw the collector current, which is beta times as much, that's this number over here, okay? Big amount of current, 100 times more than what I'm putting in. What's going to happen is this guy is fixed at, oh, who knows, 5 volts or something, right? And there's going to be an IC times that resistor drop there, right? There's going to be an IR drop in that load. And so this voltage here at the collector is going to go down, right? I mean, basically, so what's happening is the collector emitter voltage is moving from here back over to here kind of thing, right? And it will move back along, kind of along this line right here, till it's got a very small VCE there, right? And essentially, what we're doing then is we're saturating the transistor. We're turning it on full blast, okay? And when this voltage gets lower than that voltage, then it's in what I classify as saturation. Now, some people, there's a little bit of a iffiness on when you classify it as saturation or whatever, right? I mean, what you call it, but I always do it this way because I can make this wonderful table and it makes it so easy to check, okay? And some people use, instead of doing that, they say, well, if the voltage is less than this or something, then we'll call it saturation. But to me, the fundamental physics of forward bias and reverse bias, that's what sets it, okay? So if it's forward biased, in other words, I put a bigger voltage on here than this ended up, and of course that's ground, so that's always, if I put a positive voltage there, that's forward biased. So this is what we call saturation, and basically the transistor acts like a wire, or a very small resistor. Actually, the model for saturation over here is just what they call RSAT. And it's a small resistor. I should probably put that in here, small. I mean, I think what most people think when they say saturation is wire. Okay, just turned on. And in reality, even this is not the greatest model because, it's almost like it usually has about 0.2 volts across here in saturation, okay? And in some applications, that's very important. There's another kind of transistor called the field effect transistor that's often used for switching as well. And that field effect transistor really does have a resistance, okay? And they do everything they can to make that resistance as small as possible, especially for big field effect transistors that are switching like motors and stuff. And they'll get it down in the milliohms range, okay? But when you have very, big power stuff, if you have, 100 amps going through a milliohm, 100 squared times a milliohm is a lot of watts in that transistor, right? And so often, bipolar junction transistors have a better characteristic because 100 amps times 0.2 volts might be less than 100 amps squared times a milliohm or two, or maybe 10 milliohms or something, right? And so often, really high power stuff might use a BJT more likely than one of those other kinds of transistors, which we'll look at later. And sometimes they even combine the two. But those kind of characteristics are kind of important. Now the next one, I guess, if we do this thing, I'm just going to make this one. This was our favorite here, forward bias, and this would be reverse bias. So what is that? What do we call that region? Do you remember? Base emitter junction, that's right here. This is forward biased, but this is reverse biased. What's that?
The diode, shorter than wire.
Yeah, this was a diode, but it was that region where it worked like that, like this kind of, right? Right? Remember, this is, if we go back to our picture, let's go look. Okay, here's the picture of the physics of it. Remember, this was reverse biased right here, right? Because these electrons would go up into this region, they'd be minority carriers, and it's downhill to go more that way than to go out the base, right? And that gave us the thing the way we liked it. That's really how we want to operate the thing. This is the normal region of operation. We call this the active region here. Okay, so that's active. And then I'll do reverse bias, because that's actually the next most likely thing you'll run into, okay? Reverse bias. Let's go back and look at this this relay driver here. If I reverse bias this junction, of course that's probably going to be reverse biased if this is. See, if I reverse bias this, there's no current going up here, right? So there's basically no current flowing in the transistor at all. So it's like an open circuit, reverse bias. So that's like turned off, right? So that's right down here, okay? And we call that the cutoff region of the transistor. It's just kind of like somebody squeezed it there and there's nothing going through, okay? So this is cutoff. And then there's one last one. And what's that? That's so this one would be reverse biased and forward biased, like that. So what happens there? Well, that's actually, if you think about the four quadrants, that then each of these things are kind of represent a quadrant of operation. If you were to make a graph, reverse biased and forward biased, there's different four possibilities. Forward bias being plus on the graph, and reverse bias being negative, you did that. This is the other quadrant, and this is the one that's hardest to get into when we start in the active region. If we go one way in the active region, it turns into this saturation. We go the other way in the active region, it turns into this, and this is like, furthest away you get. Now, what happens, the only time that I ever find people dealing with this last region is when they just get the collector and the emitter swapped, okay? If you take a transistor and instead of popping it in like this, you put the emitter up here and the collector down here, right? Well, what does that do? Well, let's go back and think about this thing right here. It's like I swapped this thing and now I've got just a few electrons down here and a lot of them up there in the collector. Well, what it does is it acts kind of like a transistor with a very low beta. Okay? Does that make sense? Because there aren't very many electrons, down here in this region if I swap those, right? And so I kind of lost my big advantage. There is still a little bit of advantage because, it's still more downhill this way than it is going out here, right? So those electrons that see that, they're going to go that way. Now the holes are just going to go, And so you can't really say the predominant current is, electron current now. But the ones that, the electrons that do work still end up wanting to go towards the collector or the new quasi-collector, which was, the old emitter, right? And so we call this reverse active. And like I said, it's not common. Unless you mess up. Yeah. Right. Okay. So those are the four possible regions of operation of the transistor, and you can see already we've used, we came up with a circuit that went from this, you know, to these, switch between these two, and went through that one as it switched. Okay. And we also have kind of thought a little bit about, you know, using this region right here as an amplifier like this, right? So are there questions about this? Does this make sense? Okay, so now what I'd like to do next is I'd like to do some examples here. I probably should put what we're doing here. This is regions of operation. And then I want to just do some examples.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What was it used before? It's like a normal switch that'd be really hard to turn on.
For this circuit right here?
Yeah, or something like that. Like right now, we could use a little bit of current to let a lot of current pass through.
Right. Well, before they invented these transistors, they had some things called vacuum tubes, okay? And vacuum tubes, and you may have heard about them, but this is interesting. Just yesterday, a little story, what happened to me yesterday. I went over to TSS to give Carl Thompson a broken tether for one of those little robots for assembly language, okay? So I brought him this thing. So I got a broken thing. He'll fix it for me. But, you know, while I was in there talking to him, he said, oh, Carlton Cross brought in this this thing you ought to see. And so he brought me in there and showed me this this radio, you know? It was like this big and, it had kind of a case, and he pulled it out of the case and, you know, he said, well, Carlton says it doesn't work, you know, but he'd really like to get it to work again because, you know, his dad, you know, the guy who started this school here, his dad listened to World War II on this radio, you know. And so I said, Carl said, well, you know, it just won't even turn on or anything, you know. So we fiddled around with it for, you know, a little bit. But there was like six tubes in there, and they're, you know, little things like this. And some of them you can actually see the glass envelope. There's a glass envelope. They evacuate the glass or you know, use a vacuum to get the air out of there. And inside there, they'll have, on most of them, you know, the most common kind that is analogous to this transistor in some way, they have three elements. They have what they call the cathode, and it's sometimes it's also the same thing as the heater. And the heater is kind of like the light bulbs, these incandescent light bulbs you see. It heats up. Okay, and it's got a surface on it so that when it heats up, it actually, those electrons, when you heat something, they start, you know, bubbling, right? It's like water, you know, when you heat up water, it steam comes off, right? Yeah, so you heat up this cathode, and the electrons, you know, they go off, right? And this is a vacuum inside there. And you know, in general, if they, you know, just heat up the thing, they'll just kind of, you know, bounce around inside the little vacuum envelope there, right? And that would be good. But what they do to make it into kind of a thing where you can change the current is they will put a voltage on what they call the plate. And the plate is kind of, you know, just another, you know, metal plate in there. And they put a positive voltage on that, right? So when these electrons get boiled off, they go sailing, but they're going to go sailing downhill, right? Which is toward that plate. That E field is pulling them toward that plate. And if you just have just those two elements, the thing acts like a diode. Because current will flow, the electrons will flow from the cathode to the plate. But the plate isn't, you know, isn't being heated, and so it doesn't emit electrons, right? And so it won't go the other way, right? Makes sense? Because the current carrier in there is electrons only. It's the same kind of a principle we kind of have a little bit with a diode. You know, you try and make the current carrier in one thing just be N or something, you know, just electrons. So, and if you put a screen, they just make a little screen, you know, like a screen door screen, you know. Yeah. They put that in between the cathode and the plate. And then they'll put a slight negative voltage on there. And if you run that negative voltage back and forth, you know, if you make the negative voltage big, it will bring the tube into cutoff. it will scare all those electrons back over toward the cathode, right? But if you don't make it too big, there's holes in the screen, you know? And some of them will scream through there, right? And because the plate's on the other side, you know? It's kind of like, I don't know how it was, maybe in academy, when I went to academy, when Friday night chapel would come, and they had the church divided into two sides, you know? There was the boys' side and the girls' side, you know? And especially those guys who had girlfriends, man, they were right smack on the end of the aisle, you know, and the girlfriend was right on the other end of the aisle, and they were, you know, 6 feet across, but they were as close as they could get, kind of like, you know, this is the same kind of thing happens with these, you know, electrons trying to get to the high voltage. So that's a vacuum tube, and that's what they used to use before transistors. And of course, the disadvantage of the vacuum tube is it's about, you know, this big, right? Second of all, the next disadvantage is you got to heat that heater, right? And that takes a lot of energy, right? And then third of all, another disadvantage is that, you know, just like any light bulb, right? Those filaments can burn up after a while, you know. And also what happens is if you've run the thing for a long time, the material that they put on the outside of the cathode that boils off the electrons, you know, it kind of gets used up. And so you don't get very much electron emission then. But some people still love these vacuum tubes, you know, especially some audio people, you know, and they think they sound better than transistors, you know, so I'm personally not a believer in that. I think anything you can do with a vacuum tube, you can certainly do, at least for sure, with a digital signal processor and, you know, some audio transistor components. But you know, that's what they do. So what I'd like to do now is let's do an example. Let's just do and it seems like to me maybe the best thing we should do is just use an amplifier example, because we've already done this digital example right up here, right? Let's just do an amplifier. So let's try to design and analyze a common emitter amplifier. Okay, so there's our problem. Now, a common emitter amplifier, remember we kind of looked at this a little bit right here. You see, the emitter down here is common to the input and the output. And we kind of got an idea how this might work right here. You know, we put a resistor on here, right? And the idea is we put a little current in here. It makes a lot of current go down there. This is fixed at 12 volts. So when you make this guy voltage go up, this voltage here goes down, right? So it's an inverting amplifier. But nevertheless, it is some kind of an amplifier, right? So let's just try and make one, okay? And as we make it, we'll have to analyze it and see whether it works. And if it doesn't work, we'll have to reanalyze it, fix it, and reanalyze it. You know, there's an iterative process to design. Design is not just just solve n equations and n unknowns, and here's the answer. That's what you do in homework problems, but that's not how people build things, right?
You've noticed that.
Yeah, right. You wish it was as such as the old way, right? Yeah. So anyway, I'm glad you're catching on. It's one of the most important things in this class is for you to get the idea of that you can do design, and it's not like, I mean, you just try something, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, patch it up, right? So here we go. So here's a bipolar junction transistor. It seems like the thing to start with, right? It's the center of our design. And so we said that the emitter was supposed to be common. And so I'm going to put a ground right here, okay? Just because common means ground, right? Does that make sense? Okay. Now, I know that this thing, for this to work as an amplifier, this thing needs to be in the active region, right? Which means that I need this voltage higher than that voltage, which is higher than that voltage, right? So I'm going to have a power supply up here. This is how we draw power supplies generally in electronics. It just means this goes off to the, you know, to the power supply thing, okay? That way I don't have to have all these wires going with circles, you know, and the voltage sources that you guys are used to seeing in circuits. This just is, makes it the schematic much less cluttered. And sometimes we end up with large schematics that are, you know, the power supply wires go everywhere. And when you're laying out a circuit board, you will find they are like the, oh dear. I mean, that's why they even have whole layers that are just for power, right? You know, this is the power layer, this is the ground layer, and so on, you know. And actually on multi-layer boards, they will put those, you know, they'll put the signal layer between like two power layers, right? And the two power layers are actually shielding the signal layer. Because a ground, of course, is a shield, right? I mean, that's what you do. You ground the case. And if you put some kind of a current or electromagnetic, you know, current loop or, you know, some kind of a charge inside a, you know, a complete enclosure, a box that's all like aluminum or something, all the way along that aluminum, the boundary condition says the voltage has to be zero, right? So the E field terminates on the inside of that, you know, that box, and yeah, Faraday cage, right? So you kept that stuff inside, right? Which is good. It also keeps stuff from outside from getting in, right? Which is also good. So, you know, they do that, and both ground and power supply will act the same way, because it doesn't matter that was really zero. What matters is that it's exactly constant, right? No change, right? So that means changes inside can't make changes outside, right? So I'm going to put that up here. We usually call this VCC. That's capital V, subcapital C, subcapital C, and this is a positive power supply voltage. It's just the reason they call it VCC. Maybe I'll put what we want to use here. Let's just try. I know it's got to be greater than zero, so let's just say 12 volts, okay? Because 12 volts is, you know, I can get a 12-volt car battery or something. That's just kind of a standard number. So I'll do 12 volts. And we said we wanted this to be the highest, that to be the next, and that to be the next. And if we kind of look what we had over here, looks like we had like a resistor in there, right? And that looked like it might work. So let's just do that. You know, if we find out there's problems, well, we'll have to fix them. So I'm going to call this the collector resistor, R sub C. And I think the output should be here on the collector, right here. Now, what I'd really like to do is there's actually, I'd like to think about this as an AC amplifier, okay? This is going to amplify a small wiggle signal, and I'm not making this to amplify DC at the moment, okay? And that will simplify my life, because then I can use this thing here, which we call a coupling capacitor. I'll call that CL for C large, okay? When I write a C large, that means it's a short for AC, and my approximation is it's open for DC and short for AC, right? It really is open for DC, but the short for AC is kind of an approximation, okay? So I'm just going to say, you know, that's a C large, and I'm going to call this is going to be my output voltage, little v sub little o, and that is going to be only AC, right? Because only AC gets through this thing. Similarly, I need to somehow get an AC signal in, and I won't like this AC signal to be disturbed by DC on my input, so I'm just going to put another C large there. And these things, like I said, these are coupling capacitors. And the idea is they're supposed to couple the small signal, and this is a small signal, this is little v sub little, I'll call it little s, okay? So that's a small signal. Remember, small sub small was a small signal, big sub big, like this, is a DC big signal, right? And the combination of the two, you know, like the voltage base emitter, would be little sub big. In other words, little b sub big BE or something, right? Okay, now, there's no, right here, there's no way for DC current to get into that transistor base, right? What does that tell me about the region of operation of that transistor? Well, there's no way any DC current can get in here, right? And if there's no DC current, that's going to put me back over here. Let's look at our picture here. There's no base current, so I'm right here, right? If there's no base current, then I'm right down here, right? Oh, that's in the cutoff region, right? I mean, basically, it's turned off the transistor. So my beautiful idea of putting a coupling capacitor right here on the base, you know, voltage, I wanted to shield this base voltage from any DC. You know, when you have an input on your amplifier, you don't want somebody to be able to come along with a, you know, paper clip and put it in there and bang, you know, you just burned up your amplifier. That'd be really disgusting, right? So I put this coupling capacitor to keep that from happening, but I broke my circuit, right? So how could I fix that? I need a DC path for current to come in here. Yeah, small bias current. Yeah, so I mean, I could put a, you know, a little current source on there, right? But in order to be cheap here, I don't want to have a, you know, current source. Actually, I don't know why I haven't got one of those in my back pocket, right? I can get batteries like 12 volts. You know, we talked about the car battery, whatever. But current sources are a little bit problematic to come up with, right? I mean, they're not handy for one thing, because, you know, to turn off a current source, you have to put a short across it, right? That's the only way it's not dissipating any power, and I haven't got any shorts either. I mean, real shorts, right? If I have a big amount of current and I put a, you know, it's I squared R, right? R is pretty small, and I still got, you know, big power dissipated, and I, you know, I like when I turn it off, it's off. And the nice thing about voltage is I can make a switch with a very high resistance, right? And it really will be almost no current flowing. So how could I do this then if I haven't got a current source? Yeah, that's a very good idea. So I'm going to bring this guy over here. I kind of got in my way. I'm just going to call that RB, okay? So now I have a resistor RB in there, which will allow a path for DC current to come in. DC current will come down through like this. AC current will come through like that, right? And over here, the DC current comes down through like that, right? And I guess what's going to happen is there's going to be also an AC current coming down like that. So there's a little wiggle, an AC wiggle on the current. We're just going to make an AC voltage here. The AC voltage wiggling here will get out to here, okay?
But no DC.
Yeah, no DC that way. Okay?
How do we make the little wiggle a big wiggle for the V out? Or is it just...
Well, the V out, I mean, you can kind of think of there really, if there's going to be some resistor on here, maybe a very large resistor, I'll call this RL, not for R large, but for the load resistor. But, you know, we could just think of RL being infinity here. But really, you know, this is a low-pass filter, an RC filter, right? It's a low-pass filter. It's a cutoff frequency, right? And the cutoff frequency is 1 over RC. And, you know, if R goes to infinity, well, that cutoff frequency is 0. Well, does that mean 0 passes or not? Well, you know, really, 0 doesn't pass, okay? Because we never have exactly infinity here, you know. Yeah.
Don't you have to worry about there being like some positive feedback with the small wiggle going through and then back through the...
Well, let's see. This is held at 12 volts. That's actually a good question, right? So, and you know, whatever happens here, it's not going to affect... This is still 12 volts here, right? So, so you know, this thing isn't gonna get back to here because this thing is solid. In other words, it's fixed there.
Okay.
It's kind of like that Faraday box or something, you know. Okay, so now it looks like maybe this might work, right? So we got 3 minutes. We probably won't be able to do this in 3 minutes, but I'm going to assume that the beta on this transistor is 100, okay? And I'm just going to pick some stuff because that's what you do when you don't know what you're doing, right?
Yes.
You just pick something. So let's try this. I mean, try RB equal, well, I'd say like 100 kiloohms, okay? I'm going to pick something big because, you know, Austin said, let's put a big resistor there, right? I don't want very much base current, right? And then I'm going to take an RC, maybe I'd make that 1 kiloohm, okay? And now, well, how did I pick that? I actually kind of thought about that a tad, just a very little bit, right? The idea was that, you know, I wanted the collector current here was going to be 100 times bigger, right? Maybe I want to make that less than 1 kiloohm, right? Or maybe make this bigger than 100K. Because I want this voltage to be higher than that voltage, right? If the current going through here is the same as the current going through, if the IR drop here is the same as the IR drop there, then these two voltages will be the same. And I want this guy a little bit higher, right? So I'm going to make this 200K, okay? Is that right? So I just kind of picked this. If it was 101K, then this guy would be the same voltage as that boy. If this current here is 1/100th of what that is, right? Make sense? Okay, so now what I'd like to do is I'd like to take that approach that we did last time with the diodes, right? First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to solve for the DC voltage at the base, right? And the DC current going in the base. And actually, the DC current going in the base is more important than the voltage at this point. The voltage is like 0.7 volts. We already know that, right? So to get the current, I'm going to say IB here. This is capital I sub capital B. It's little I sub capital B there, but I want to find capital I. Little I sub capital B is big I sub capital B plus little I sub capital B. And this is due to the DC, so I'm going to find that first. So capital I sub capital B is going to equal VCC minus 0.7 volts divided by RB, which is 11.3 divided by 200K, which is 11.3 over 200 milliamps, right? Set 0.7 volts across the base emitter junction. It's a forward bias diode, right? Does that make sense? And then IC, of course, I've already got that too. IC equals beta IB, which equals 100 times that. So that would be 11.3 over 2, which is about approximately 6 milliamps, okay? And this is about 0.0... Is it 0.06 milliamps? Is that right? Move it over. I move this plus one of the 6 milliamps. Yeah. Okay, so now, if you think about it, we should be able to check and see. What is the voltage at the collector? V sub C. V sub C, we got to check V sub C. V sub C, that's capital V sub capital C. What is that? Well, that's going to be 12 minus IC times RC, right? So 12 minus IC RC, or VCC minus that. I guess I don't need any divide by here, which equals 12 minus 6 times... What did I say that thing was? 100K? 200K. No, 1K, right? 12 minus 6. So it's 12 minus 6 times 1, which is 6. 6 volts. Okay, so this guy is 6 volts DC, right? This guy is 0.7 volts. So is this thing forward or reverse biased? reverse. That's what we wanted, right? And this guy is definitely forward biased. So we're in the active region, okay? In fact, if you look on the curve, we're kind of right over here at 6 volts, right? And we're here at some 6 microamps or something, somewhere in here, right? Make sense? So next day, we'll have to do the small signal analysis and see how much this amplifier actually amplifies for us. What kind of a voltage gain do we get? It looks like it should work now, though.